It is my pleasure to introduce to you Steve Josephic, co-founder and managing director of LifeSackNews.com. In 1977, Steve experienced a profound conversion back to his Catholic faith. Soon afterwards, he was motivated to volunteer for Canada's national pro-life organization, Campaign Life Coalition, also known as CLC. He soon gave up the financial rewards of his successful interior decorating business to join the pro-life organization full-time. Steve has been a leader in CLC for over 30 years and has served in a wide variety of senior roles within the organization. In 1997, he began and managed for almost a decade the website for CLC and the national pro-life newspaper, The Interim. With editor-in-chief John Henry Weston and CLC, he also co-founded the now influential, separately incorporated, non-profit LifeSackNews.com, an international news service on life, family, and related issues. His topic? How to survive what seems to be lots of bad news and stay sane and reasonably at peace.
All right. Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to give you both indigestion and also later on it'll soothe your digestion. Different parts of this talk. Let's begin with a brief prayer. I ask our Lord to bless this talk and to help me say whatever he wants me to say. I also ask that everyone in this room be blessed to somehow receive, despite my own inadequacies and failings, whatever will most help each one of them to receive, to increase their fervor to protect the innocent human lives, families, and souls that you have created, Father. And I beg that my listeners might be inspired to persevere with full confidence and total trust in you, Father in heaven, no matter how great will be the challenges they will individually encounter in the months and years ahead. Amen. We always begin our meetings and talks at LifeSite News with a prayer. There's good reason for doing that. We've been doing that the last several years, especially. I really liked Matt Walsh's talk last night. I don't know if any of you heard that last night, but he has a way of telling you exactly what's on his mind, doesn't he? You have no doubt of what he's thinking. And I just have to work on what I saw last night, a deep voice. I just have to try and get that deep voice. That's impressive, you know. Well, I'm very honored to have been asked by Molly Smith to be here today with all of you. You are a very special chosen people, the salt of the earth, and I mean that. I've been around in this work for 35 years, and I've seen a lot of folks, and you are the people that God has chosen. In many ways, you are a remnant of truth and civilization at a time when there is an historic collapse of civilization, an historic decline. You are the people that we love to write about most, and we're determined to promote your newsworthy efforts, to which the mainstream media and even many religious media do not give sufficient, if any, coverage, or they fail to cover it, or they distort it. That's why we were created. LifeSite News exists to serve all of you. Before I go any further, I just want to ask how many here are familiar with LifeSite News? Do you read it? Okay, wow, that's a lot. Good. All right, thanks. Well, and I hope by the end of this, more of you will be reading LifeSite News on a regular basis. Back in September 1997, there was John Henry Weston who spoke here last year, and myself. And that was it. That was LifeSite News. And then we stumbled along trying to make something out of this new internet thing. And for the first several years, a few people came and read our reports. This was because not too many had internet connections or proper computers. The software was difficult to use, and if anyone had an internet connection, it was painfully slow and terribly unreliable. Some of you probably remember those days. It required great patience and determination. Now, all that seems like 100 years ago. Things have changed so much. However, those who did read our reports every day in those early years were mostly leaders in the movement around the world, so it was worth doing that. Then more people got computers at home. The internet became much easier to use. It became faster. We hired more staff, and we learned a lot about how to develop a first-class international news service on life and family. It's been a constant, steep learning curve, and it hasn't slowed down at all, that learning curve, with many trials and tribulations along the way. Now we have about 25 staff in several nations, and were visited last year by over 30 million individual users. In the past month alone, almost 7 million LifeSite pages were read by those who came to our website. Interestingly, the large majority of readers are now using mobile devices, by far the largest majority now, smartphones and tablets. That has been a massive change in just the last couple of years. Recently, we experienced a very unexpected and, for us, moving recognition of our years of dedication to this work. We are not used to getting recognition. John Henry and I were both presented with the Cardinal John J. O'Connor Pro-Life Award by the large Catholic CEOs and executives organization, Legatus, on January 29th at their annual summit in Orlando, Florida. A few other pro-life leaders, including David Dalyden of the Center for Medical Progress. There's David over there with Tom Monahan. Dr. Teresa Deischer, a leading biotechnology developer of moral stem cell treatments, and Professor Robert George were also honored during the summit. It had a timely theme, no more comfortable Catholicism. And that could have been more generally stated, no more comfortable Christianity. The theme dominated the conference talks. In his powerful opening night speech, Professor Robert George, who we all call Robbie, and most people who know him call him Robbie, "It is no longer easy," he said, "to be a faithful Christian, an authentic witness to the truths of the gospel for Catholics and evangelicals in America. It is now Good Friday." And you know what? He got tremendous applause for saying that. Finally, somebody was admitting what we have been seeing for some time. Robbie advised his audience, "One thing alone will matter. Let me say this with maximum clarity. Whether we stood up for the truth, speaking it loud and in public, bearing the costs of discipleship that are inevitably imposed on faithful witnesses to truth by cultures that turn away from God and His law will be very important. Or were we ashamed of the gospel?" And that's the kind of cultural situation we are in now, today. If we deny the truths of the gospel, we are really like Peter, avowing that "I do not know the man." Robbie added that if we fail the test, as Peter did when he three times denied Christ, let us remember that Easter is coming. We will experience fear, just as the apostles did, but do not be ashamed of the gospel. At the end of this talk, Robbie George received a standing ovation. It is time. We can and now must say these things that most would have been offended by even just a few years ago. What Robbie said also applies to all of us here regarding our now politically incorrect views on the sanctity of life and the natural family and the need for a moral culture to maintain a healthy civilization. Do not be ashamed of being pro-life out in the culture when you're with people who are not pro-life, who are not Christians. Of being a man, of being for man, woman, marriage only. Of warning people against the harm of pornography, the great danger to children of explicit amoral sex education, the evil of euthanasia, of the physical, emotional, and spiritual dangers of homosexual behavior. All of the authentic traditional Christian teachings on these are teachings of Jesus Christ's gospel of love. Do not be ashamed of them, as too many now seem to be. Now, getting back to LifeSite, it almost seems impossible to explain to you what we do every day and all that is involved in running LifeSite. It has been an incredible, exciting, intense, and always unpredictable experience. Now we have an annual Rome Life Forum in Vatican City every year. And we've joined with SPUC from the UK and quite a few other pro-life organizations, and now it's run by the Voice of the Family. That's what we call our group now in Rome. We also go to Rome for other events. We covered the entirety of the last two synods on the family We did an incredible amount of reporting on that, and reporting that of a type that most others did not do. We've been to India. It's amazing what happened there. John Henry spoke to 10,000 people for over a week at a conference, and he did it 2 years in a row. And the second year he went there, a number of people introduced them to their new babies who were named John Henry. He was encouraging them to have more children. And I had talked to the cardinal there in India, Cardinal Varkey of the state of Kerala, and I expressed to him my concern. I says, your churches are full. It's very dynamic here, the faith. You have so many Catholic hospitals, Catholic schools, Catholic institutions. But every family I see has only two children. I haven't seen one with more than two children. And every family with two children has one boy and one girl. And he said, I know. We're very, very concerned. We are going to disappear. And the birth rate is going down. I said, you have to do something about this. I told the cardinal. And he says, yes, I know. I don't know what to do, though. Tell me. I said, you're going to have to talk to the people and encourage them to have more children. He says, well, we can't do that. In our culture, the priests don't talk to people about such personal matters. And I said, you have no choice. You either disappear or you will continue. And I left him a lot of documents which instructed his staff about where all this was really coming from. He thought it was coming from intellectuals in India who said they had to cut down their population. It was a very serious thing. I said, no, this didn't come from India. This came from the West, came from Europe and North America. And then they infiltrated your people here, and then they started telling your people that you had a severe population problem. You're not overcrowded here, even though there's a lot of people there. India is heading for demographic collapse, actually. 2 months later, Cardinal Varkey and the bishops of India came out with a public statement for the first time in their history, encouraging all families to try to have more than two children. That happened, and it was news all around the world. And that just happened we just happened to be there. And I happened to see this, and we happened to talk to him. We've been to Mexico. I had instructed all of the leaders of Mexico's pro-life groups at a conference for 2 days, myself and another, Matthew Hoffman, who lives in Mexico, and he's one of our journalists. It was very profitable, and they certainly enjoyed the information we gave them. John Henry has been to Russia. He's going to Georgia, next to Russia, very shortly. He's been to England, France, Germany, New Zealand, Australia, Ecuador. And we've covered the marches for life in Canada and in Washington very extensively. And our coverages, we're told, have actually caused a lot of other countries to start their own marches for life. They've seen our reports, and they thought, wow, this is a really good thing to do. And so now they have one in Rome every year, and we go to that as well. But they have many more. They're popping up all over the place. We've been sued by a priest, of all things. A Quebec priest who calls himself pro-choice. He's pro-euthanasia, pro-homosexual, and et cetera. And he was a member of the federal parliament in Canada. And his bishop received a letter from a Cardinal Ratzinger, which attached to it was several LifeSite reports telling the bishop that he must ask this priest to remove himself from parliament or be removed from the priesthood. So the priest decided to come back and following the bishop's directions, and then he sued us for $500,000. And the weird thing about it all is we had to deal with this lawsuit in the province of Quebec, all in French, and in the diocese in which this priest was extremely popular and extremely influential. The deck was completely stacked against us. Our lawyers initially thought it would, $30,000, it'd be all over. They don't have a case. We had top lawyers. We consulted many very good lawyers. And they said they don't have a case. $750,000 later, it looked, we didn't stand a chance. And it was fixed. Our lawyers, at one time, one of our lawyers broke down. And he just had never experienced such unjust decisions in the pretrial hearings as happened to us. Well, the Lord intervened. We prayed for this priest all the time. We sincerely did. Every morning we prayed for him. He got cancer. He died. And his lawyer called us 2 days later after his death and said, listen, I'd like to end this whole thing. You drop your countersuit, we'll all drop the lawsuit, and we won't pursue this anymore. Our lawyer was dumbfounded. He says, this never happens. So the power of prayer. And hopefully, you know, and we still pray for Father Gravel, you know. But it shows the power of LifeSite News, because we were reporting just simply what he was doing that nobody outside of Quebec was reporting. And it was important that other people in the world know about exactly what he was doing. David Dalyden, the most wonderful thing that's been happening with his videos and investigative videos. And he was going down to Houston, Texas to present himself to the court. He's been indicted on criminal charges instead of Planned Parenthood, who he obviously exposed as doing criminal activity. We thought we've got to really make a big deal about him going there and promote it. So we worked with other pro-lifers, and we all together arranged a press conference, and we also, LifeSite, launched a petition. Within a week, we got 125,000 signatures, and we brought that down. And then we'd never done this before. We did live streaming of everything going on down there, of the press conference and of David going walking from one court to the next. It was quite wild for us. We had Andy Parrish, who went down from Minneapolis, Minnesota. That's where he works for us, from his home. Lisa Bourne, a reporter of ours from Des Moines, Iowa, she went down. Dustin Siggins quarterbacked a lot of the logistics politically from Des Moines, Iowa. Father Ben Johnson, who lives, he's an Orthodox priest, and he's our U.S. Bureau Chief. He did a lot of stories, just pumped them out constantly during that whole day on what was happening. Patrick Crane, who lives in Barry's Bay, Ontario, he made sure everything was posted quickly and that the photos went up right away. John Jelsovac, my son from Millbrook, he made sure that the social media was taken care of. Myself and John Henry were Skyping back and forth to everybody. We were all Skyping live constantly. Get closer to the camera. I can't hear you. Move the camera over there. And as Andy was moving the camera, I didn't know what kind of camera he had. And I saw all these other media. And this, by the way, we got all the mainstream media were there. It was a huge success. But Andy sometimes had trouble getting in with his camera. And then later on, he showed me his camera. He had a laptop, a big laptop with a little camera on top. So he had a hard time getting in amongst all those newsmen, and I didn't realize that's what he was doing. That's what he had to do to live stream it. Anyway, it was mayhem, it was chaos, but it was very, very successful for David Dalyden. That helped him tremendously. We started a magazine just recently called Faithful Insight, and here's just three editions of it here. It's a glossy, really good magazine. We've gotten tremendous comments from people about it. We've just published our sixth edition. A lot of it is LifeSite stories, but they look and read completely different when they're in a magazine. And it's for our Catholic audience. We don't just have a Catholic audience. We have people from all denominations read us. And we have people of no denomination read us. It's very interesting. So a few weeks ago, I saw the movie 13 Hours. It's a true story of the attempt by six heroic Marines and Navy SEALs hired as security operators for the CIA in Benghazi, Libya, to save the lives of U.S. Ambassador Christopher Stevens and his staff in a nearby diplomatic compound. Now, I have to warn you, it's a tough, realistic movie, and I was shaken by it. The security resources for the ambassador were pathetic. When the six operators first visited his compound, they saw it was dangerously vulnerable to an attack from Islamist militants. But no one would believe them. Everyone shrugged it off and said things would be okay and that the operators were being too negative, too pessimistic, too sensationalist. However, they were being realistic. Based on their years of experience and what they knew, what they could see as people whose job it was to know and see these things and to warn people about what was likely to happen. Well, you know the story. The ambassador's compound was overrun by the Al-Qaeda militants. The CIA's hired operators were located a mile away and repeatedly ordered to stand down while they saw certain disaster unfolding. Despite lacking sufficient numbers and firepower and any U.S. military support, all denied to them, they eventually ignored the orders, risked their lives, and did what they had to be done. However, it was too late for Ambassador Stevens and an assistant. In the end, those six brave men, all with wives and children back home, saved the lives of 36 persons from both locations. Unfortunately, two of them were killed and one was severely wounded. Now, why did I tell you all this? Well, I was overcome by how in so many ways this mayhem felt just like what we experience every day doing the work of LifeSite. In my mind, I was there with these men trying to do what is right, regardless of opposition and personal threats. At LifeSite, we also are in a vicious daily war, but we don't use military weapons or engage in violent fights or use profanities. Our weapons are prayer, truth, and professionalism. However, we do confront terrible evils and violence every day. This work is not for the faint of heart. Dramatic news stories often happen suddenly and must be quickly responded to so others can take critically needed action. We don't have anywhere near the resources of our opponents, but we do battle anyway with what we have and often achieve spectacular results. And I could go on for hours about some of those. It's just extraordinary. However, some of our team have become wounded by stress and exhaustion and have had to leave the work. The LifeSite team also reports many heroic and inspiring stories of selfless life and family heroes that most people would otherwise never hear about. And truly, they never would. But when we put those up, they are our most read stories. It's interesting. Our long experience gives us an unmistakable, often unique view of the implications of most of these developments that we desperately try to warn others about, just like those CIA operators in 13 hours. The killings and threats to life and to our Christian civilization are now far, far greater than what happened in Benghazi. We are daily observers of horrible obscenities, the killing of millions via abortion, euthanasia, infanticide, and the deliberate corruption of cultures by pornography, abusive sex ed programs, and more to facilitate all of this, and a wholesale, worldwide, historically unprecedented demographic collapse. Stephen Mosher, I don't know, maybe he mentioned that this morning. We publish reports that are essentially documenting the collapse of our civilization. But just as those Marines and Navy SEALs experienced, despite the solid evidence we always provide, many do not believe us. They say we're too negative. We need to be more positive. We're sensationalizing things. We're being disrespectful. How I wish that was all true. I'd gladly take the blame. The reality is that we put our whole heart and soul at considerable personal cost into this mission to provide the truth about the most crucial developments in the world today. It is often the truth that no one else or few will take the risks to report or that they have the freedom to report these things. Many think everything is fine, we'll be okay. They don't want to be disturbed by the articles on LifeSite or talks like Robbie George gave. Facing uncomfortable truths is obligatory in our view so that we can make the best decisions to protect our families, our faith, our freedoms, and our nation. If you read LifeSite every day for many years, as does NFL great Matt Burke, who told this to John Henry recently in Washington, you will be especially well-informed and able to determine what you must do. We love our work. We love it because it pleases God. We are doing what he inspires us to do. Who could wish for anything better, regardless of all the crosses that come with it? We embrace those crosses. That is how Christianity has always changed the world. We offer our very lives to it. The most common question I am asked when I personally meet LifeSite readers is, how do you keep doing this every day? The question is asked emphatically, with marvel, and a strange look on the eye of the person making the comment. They might as well be asking, are you crazy or what? And the obvious reason the question is asked is because they can't see themselves doing this, enduring every day, month after month, year after year, the task of reporting on so many difficult and disturbing developments and enduring all the flack that comes after the reports are published. And we do get a lot of flack, but we get a lot of praise too. The implication is that they would go crazy or get totally distressed or depressed. From daily news subscribers, a frequent comment, which is often not a criticism, is that they can't cope anymore with reading LifeSite news. And they have to unsubscribe or not read the news at night before going to bed. For many, it is often too emotionally draining and anxiety-producing. We understand. However, interesting enough, most of them eventually come back because of the consistent quality and importance of our reports. They can't find this stuff anywhere else. Michael O'Brien is a Canadian author of Catholic fictional novels, often dealing with apocalyptic themes. And this is Michael at an event we had in Houston, in Fort Worth, Texas. Michael's very popular 28 novels and other books are read all over the world and have been translated into 14 languages. He's also a LifeSite board member and a sometimes contributor of articles. During his comments at the beginning of our 15th anniversary gala in Washington, D.C., Michael stated about reading LifeSite news reports, "My temperament, being of the melancholic Irish sort, tends to say," then he put his face down in his hands, "Oh, I don't think I can read everything on LifeSite today." And we all laughed. And this is an author of apocalyptic novels. And so these days, there are days even when I can't read LifeSite news reports. I admit it is indeed increasingly stressful and often seems humanly impossible to do this unique work for God, there are reasons why most of us have been able to persevere and reasons why a good number of our readers are able to continue reading and using these reports. Let me tell you more about the how and the why, and this is where we get into the title of the talk, if you're wondering when it was coming. Okay. Would it help? Highly recommended is the recent movie Bridge of Spies. There might be a slide coming up there. Tom Hanks plays the role of the American lawyer assigned to defend a Russian spy on the left in this Cold War era true story. At the first meeting, the lawyer asks the spy why he does not seem to be upset that he will likely be executed after the trial. The calm Russian responds in a sincerely questioning manner, "Would it help?" Huh. Now that was very interesting, I thought. Of course. What help could it have been for him to get anxious and fearful? It would achieve nothing and it would only harm him. Great anxiety would prevent him from thinking clearly and living the best that he can with the time left to him. The spy gives the same response a couple of times, other times in the movie, when he is in danger. So I often ask myself now when I get anxious and upset, and unfortunately I still do at times, would it help? No. Amazingly, every single time the obvious answer is no, it does not help at all. It is self-defeating to respond to difficulties with those draining emotions that hurt me and hurt those around me. In our homes, some of us have recently been saying that phrase to each other. We've all seen the movie, by the way. Reminding ourselves of its wisdom. Among our staff, we're doing the same thing. We get into a difficult time and somebody says, "Would it help?" And we'll go, "No, that's right, yeah, wouldn't." However, it can be healthy sometimes to vent some anger and let it all out and have a good cry. But what is not good is dwelling in fear and anxiety. Do you believe in God or not? Yeah. At times, our fundraising campaigns sometimes seem to be going badly. That is no small matter for us because we live right on the edge financially, usually with hardly any money left in our bank before each campaign starts. But would it help if we got all stressed out and fearful? Nope, not at all. We need our wits about us, not choking fears and anxiety, to find ways to hopefully resolve this and other situations that appear threatening or are just plain terrible to endure. We relate our concerns and our needs to our readers so that they will understand the situation we are in. Then we leave it up to them and to God. And it works. Always has worked. But let's get deeper into what has maintained us for all these years of LifeSite's existence. First of all, we have learned that we must pray. In the past couple of years, LifeSite staff have been praying more than ever. We also often ask others to pray for us. Prayer calms the mind and opens the heart and mind to inspiration. Every morning we start the day with a staff prayer conference call, consistently. Without the sustenance of that ongoing relationship with God, we could never survive this grueling daily task of confronting many of the world's greatest evils head on. And we do confront them head on. Prayer helps us to realize that the outcome of all of our work is ultimately always up to God and not our skills and efforts, as important as they still are. We are not in charge. Failure and success are not terms we should often use. We just have to be certain that we are always faithful and that we are doing our very best. The battle on the issues we face is God's battle, not ours. But we are nevertheless obliged to put our whole heart and soul into this work on the most important issues in the world. Michael O'Brien, in his talk last March in Fort Worth, Texas, at one of our board members' homes, summed up this crucial lesson when he stated, "The deeper work that God does in all of us, regardless of our circumstances in life, is to take us to a more profound level of dependence on Him. It can lead to a condition of spiritual childhood, to become very little and trusting in God's hands, to do our part and to let Him do the rest." He went on, "We cannot measure," this we must keep in mind always, "we cannot measure what the success or failure of our efforts is. It is not our task to measure them. That is God's business." I have found that to be very true. We often hear weeks, months, or years later about major impacts our reports have made in individuals' lives or in important situations. It is always amazing. We had no idea. And it usually does not really matter if we did. That's God's business, just using us very faulty instruments. I have found that those who tend to have the most difficulty enduring pro-life, pro-family work are professionals who are used to getting consistent results from professional planning methods. They're used to being in control. However, in this work, many of the techniques of the business or professional work just don't work the same. We are opposed by powers and principalities that manifest themselves in many ways, such as unexplainable equipment and internet failures, sudden sickness, several times very life-threatening among our staff and their families, service provider breakdowns, serious miscommunications, and much more. We have experienced some days and weeks that defy rational explanation. Makes sense considering the work we're doing. We are also daily confronted with deceptions, outright lies, manipulations, and shocking corruption or weakness of influential persons and institutions, including clergy at all levels, law enforcement, court, and legislative authorities. This causes the professional control person's severe bewilderment. I've seen it. They usually don't last long, and sometimes not even a few weeks. But they do last if they have a strong spiritual life. Then one learns to accept wherever things take him or her, and to go with God's inspirations and plans rather than on our own humanly limited strategies. Let's go to another necessary understanding of how to cope with developments of or personal failings that could cause fear, anxiety, and inner meltdown. In his book, The Second Greatest Story Ever Told, Father Michael E. Gately writes, "The sin of Adam was necessary to bring us our great glorious Redeemer, Jesus Christ. The sin is called O Happy Fault, and its evil is destroyed completely by the Savior. This is the wonder of wonders of divine mercy. It has the power not only to bring good out of evil, but an even greater good. Truly, as St. Paul says, where sin increased, grace abounded all the more. And this is absolutely crucial. Where sin increased, grace abounded all the more. Father Gately qualifies this, however, and he says, of course, as St. Paul explains, this does not mean that we continue in sin, that grace can abound. By no means. But it does reveal an amazing secret of divine mercy, something that proves God's ways are not our ways. After all, now in human terms, can loss be gain? Yet in the realm of divine mercy, it can be so. If we repent and trust in the power of God's mercy, then nothing is lost when he brings an even greater good out of our evil. Our evil might simply be not trusting in God for everything. Father Gately was also one of the main speakers at the Legatus Summit. In his talk, he presented a spiritual plan to help everyone present to be prepared for, quote, what is to come in the near future. Recently, we've been reporting especially alarming developments about Planned Parenthood, the Obama administration's assault on religious freedom and conscience rights, the advance of euthanasia, hateful, oppressive actions by gay rights activists, and an alarming rise in influence of the anti-human, freedoms and rights-threatening climate change movement. Most disturbing of all to our readers is the confusion and high level of efforts to change traditions and seemingly even doctrine related to core moral beliefs in the Catholic Church. The temptation to discouragement is now greater than at any time that I can recall since we started LifeSite News and since the last 35 years that I've been doing this work. Remember, where sin increased, grace abounded all the more. That is, no matter how dark things seem, and maybe are, the reality is that the power of God's grace is always greater. He is always in total control. He sees all, knows all, and has a plan. The defeat of evil is always certain, although in the interim we may have to endure great hardships and suffering, while God's plan of creating greater good from these trials continues and eventually concludes. We can be certain that there is such a plan for everything that happens, and that our prayers and fidelity are encouraged, are recognized by God, and can have a role in limiting the suffering and advancing the good. Evil is not only eventually defeated, but the end result is that God confounds that evil and transforms it into an even greater good than before the evil occurred. That is, the greater the evil is, the greater will be the later miracles of God's grace in response. We are certain of that, and this pattern has been occurring all throughout history. Michael O'Brien reminds us, it was a very important lesson for me, looking back in hindsight, to see that we must never lose hope, and that if we are given a particular grace or calling, we must be willing to persist through at times very dark waters, understanding that there will come temptation for false relief from trials. All of us at LifeSite are people of hope. That's why we do this work. We keep doing this work because we are certain that we are on the right side, and that in the end, all will happen as it is supposed to happen, no matter what. Everything ends up being to the good. Everything. There's another temptation I have often seen people give into. That is, in response to disturbing developments, many take the road of generally ignoring the evils presented to them, ridiculing or reviling the messengers, and rejecting their own obligations. They turn to comfortable, don't rock the boat and don't upset my life responses, and looking after themselves. It is a deadly temptation. This lukewarmness, if not cold-heartedness. Some temptations are obvious, but there will come an alternative kind of temptation, said Michael O'Brien, to simply pursue a good life, a good, faithful Catholic life, but to leave unfulfilled the particular calling and path that God has given you. Technically, no sins have been committed, but something is lost. Some fruitfulness for souls is lost to the world. Our task is to be faithful to the inspirations guided by reason and discernment always, but at the core is going forth in the face of the culture of death in a dark time with the light of Christ within us in Christian hope. That willingness the Lord can work with. Michael continued, anyway, I could go on and on. I would say, above all, we must trust in the Lord in all circumstances. Trust in Him absolutely. Remember, would it help? Trust in Him absolutely. This is how we survive at LifeSite. Stay reasonably sane, and how we continue to grow to be able to endure exposure to even greater disturbances with a relatively peaceful disposition. Mind you, it's an up-and-down process for most of us. I have good days and bad days, but the growth in the good, the ability to endure what was previously unendurable, and to still laugh and enjoy life and family continues, and it is a wonder. It is a wonder of God's grace. He gives what we need if we continue to always ask and then trust. Nothing is worth losing our peace for an extended time. Would it help? It is useless to be down on ourselves for our natural human weaknesses or personal failings as long as we are making our best efforts. Would it help? Now, there are also other things that we should do in regular exercise, quiet downtimes, getting out into nature, and time for simple enjoyment with others. I love to watch inspiring movies and read inspiring fictional novels that take me out of the day-to-day war that I'm in every day. I just got to get away from it. And there are some excellent movies that have come out in the last year. My wife and I, after many years of child raising, started going back out on Saturday night dates again. And we go for dinner and a movie. And we do this every Saturday, if there's a reasonable movie every Saturday. And then we watch a movie at home. And it wonderfully coincides with a time when some exceptionally good movies have been coming out. Now, you might want to write down some of these titles. Maybe you've seen them, maybe you haven't. But I'll just quickly give you a list. I highly recommend Risen. It's just come out. Story of a Roman tribune in Jerusalem after he sees Christ dead on the cross. It's very well done and very different. 33, the movie of 33 miners in Chile who are trapped in the mine and rescued. A true story. The Finest Hours. True story of a 1950s Coast Guard rescue. Excellent. Heroic, virtue, all of that is in there. Bridge of Spies, which I've mentioned. The new Cinderella movie. It's actually really good. It's full of, it's real people. There is some animation, but it's real people. It's vastly superior to the original Cinderella. And again, it's good for the soul, that movie. McFarland. True story of how a teacher inspired a group of students in a poor Spanish-American town to become leading runners. Woodlawn, a true high school football story, an overcoming of racism at a time when black students were not welcome in sports. And lastly, War Room, a wonderful movie about the awesome power of prayer and the role it can play in healing broken or damaged relationships.
What was that one?
War Room. It's two words, War Room. Yeah, it's a very helpful movie. Now, for the past several years, I've gotten into reading Western novels by Louis L'Amour, Max Brand, and Zane Grey. And that, you know, I would never have thought of reading those, but a few others have been reading. They said, why don't you do these? And I just am amazed by these novels. There's always redemption in the stories. There's sacrifice. They're full of heroic virtues. Good always defeats bad, but at a cost. And the hero always gets his girl, and the girl always gets her man. You know, so, it's, you know, I just love them. And there's lots of fascinating real history about the West into the stories, as well as descriptions of awesome nature at real locations. You learn a lot about your own country reading those novels. And now I've got this overwhelming desire to ride a horse through the Grand Canyon and go to Arizona, Texas, Nevada, Kansas, and California. You know, so I told my wife, we're going to go. So anyway, in conclusion, I hope this talk was in some way helpful for you to persevere in doing God work for life and family. I also hope it will help you to endure reading our daily news, reports that you and those around you can gain maximum benefit from them. The purpose of LifeSight is to change the culture. We research, write, and publish the stories. Our readers are the ones who actually cause the culture change to happen. And they have been amazing in doing so, especially those who fully trust in God. God bless you all. Thank you.
That is good. I said, what was that saying about all the news that's fit to print or something like that? How do you decide how much you're going to print? Is there a quantity or how do you look for stories?
We scan the whole internet, but we also have people send us information. And then we publish the most that we can actually cope with during that day. That's how we do it. And we prioritize, of course, which are the more important and which are the less important. Every day is a huge challenge, I can tell you that. There's always much more to report than we can cope with, but we're getting a lot better at it.
Okay. Do you feature any good news?
Absolutely, and that's the one thing that many people miss. You know, the bad news tends to dominate one's thoughts, but we actually do publish many inspiring, wonderful stories. And lots of times we see some what people think is bad news as good news. That is, something is being revealed that has been hidden. And because it's revealed and was hidden, now it can be dealt with. That's good news. And it usually turns out to be a good news story in the long run.
Good. Two-part question. Where do most of the people get their news today? You don't see many newspapers selling. Whole pile of them out there in the hotel lobby, just sit there. And any opinions on the Drudge Report? Did they help you, hurt you?
Most people get their news from television, but the younger generation, they get all their news from the internet. I still get a newspaper. The Drudge Report used to use us all the time. We'd have links on Drudge, and then they stopped. And that's because of we're pretty certain it's because of our stories on homosexuality. That's one area where Drudge and us have a major disagreement. Again, Drudge is secular, but it does a lot of good in many ways in that it's conservative in many ways. But we haven't been on there for a long time. But for quite a while, many of our stories are right at the top of Drudge Report.
Okay, I think we have a couple budding journalists out there. Are you looking for reporters? What would you look for in hiring somebody? And a second part of that, just so I don't miss this, is what you do appropriate for young people, children.
What do we do for children? First of all, for children, we help form their families. That's what we do for children.
I mean, would it be appropriate for them to read?
Oh, would it be appropriate for them to read? I don't think young children, but it's geared for teens and upwards. Yeah, some of the stuff is pretty, although we have a policy of not putting anything really explicit on LifeSight News. That's a firm policy. And sometimes it gets up there and I tell the editors, take that down. You know, and same with ads on LifeSight. We don't want to add more scandal to the scandal that's already there. Now, as far as the kind of people who we hire, they have to already have a familiarity with the pro-life world and the pro-life issues. It's too steep a learning curve otherwise. They have to have a natural writing ability. This has to be a passion for them. And they must also have a spiritual life. Without those three elements, they won't last. They won't be able to do the job. So that's basically what we look for.
Okay. Now, this is a tough one, a little controversy here. If you have to report on the Pope, are you at pressure one way or another? Can you report fairly, or how does that work? Because it's got some comments here.
That's the $64 million question. That is by far our most difficult issue. People don't realize, many readers don't realize, and especially our critics don't realize, how very, very carefully we report on anything related to the Vatican or Pope Francis. And how we consult with each other, and we consult with people outside. And we even call people in Rome, in Europe. We call bishops, we call cardinals. They don't realize. We do a lot of homework when we write these stories. We write them because we love the church. We write them because we love the Holy Father. We write them because we love God. That's our purpose. And what we've learned through all the years of LifeSite News is when we write stories about things that are not being resolved, our writing of them helps them to finally become resolved and to lessen the damage of whatever problems that are out there. It's been proven overwhelmingly. And so, you know, we're confident that this is what is going to be the result. But it is hard because we get a lot of flack, tremendous flack. And it's always because of misunderstanding on the part of the people who are reading it. And they don't read the stories carefully either. They just see a few things and they make assumptions very quickly. If they read the whole story, they'll see where we're coming from.
You've been listening to Steve Josephic, co-founder and managing director of LifeSiteNews.com, and the 2016 Bringing America Back to Life convention presenter.